In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn or stay in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the name of his sons was Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpha, the name of the other Ruth. They lived there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughter-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return, each of you, to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband." Then she kissed them and left, lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "No, we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet in my womb that they may become your husband, or sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpha kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, that being Naomi, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people should be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, "Is this Naomi?" She said to them, "Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. For the Lord has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi, when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me?" So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. It's an engaging little book because it's not about the high and mighty affairs of state. It's about family. And we see in this book an account of a man, his wife, his two sons, and their two children, and their wives. We see it's in this experience that talks to us about death, it talks to us about marriages, it talks to us about famine, it talks to us about difficulties, it talks to us about commitment, it talks to us about love. It's all here. This is life. This is life. And we saw in the opening verse, by way of very brief resume, that there was a national heartache. The last verse of the previous book, the book of Judges, which you don't have, let me read it to you. In those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. People did as they wanted. They did what was wanted. And you know, as well as I do, that when people are left to do what they want to do, they don't get up to any good. You take law and order out of any society. Law and order of any society, and the thing descends into chaos. We've had three wonders broken in our house in the last 5 or 6 weeks. We called the police after each incident. We rang them up, and I got a phone call today from a young lady in Coatbridge, a support officer. She says, "Would you like to come out?" Actually, my wife took it, but she gave it to me. Would you like to come out and talk to you about this? And I said, "Well, I don't want to waste your time." I says, "What are you actually going to say to me?" I says, "I'm not being cheeky, but what are you going to say to me?" And she says, "Well," I says, "I've got CCTV up." And she says, "Well, there's nothing really much more I can do." And I felt like saying to her, "It's not your fault there's no policemen walking about the streets." And I'm not saying that our society has fallen into chaos. But when a society, and there is no sense of law and order, and everybody's doing what they want, then people suffer. People suffer. And this community suffered because God had told this nation that he loved them. And God says, "I will show you that I love you. I will provide for you. And what I want you to do is to love me and love each other." And over their history, they had shown that they had loved God partially but not completely. And they certainly weren't loving each other. And when we don't do what God tells us to do, there's always a consequence. There's always a consequence to our actions. We cannot get away from it. We can deny it. We can say that it's not true. We can say it's bad luck. We can use whatever terminology we like. But our lives are not lived in a vacuum. Our lives are lived under the all-seeing, all-knowing eye of God. That's a fact. That's a fact of God's word. And I read last night from Judges chapter 6, where it said, because the people of God did not walk in the ways of God, God then allowed a neighboring nation, in fact, two neighboring nations, the Midianites and the Amalekites, to come in, steal their cattle and steal their crops. Basically, what happened was, the Israelites went out in the spring, They ploughed the ground, they sowed the seed. The seed germinated, it began to grow, and was about to reach harvest stage, or when it had just been harvested. Then the Midianites and the Amalekites would come storming in, drive the people away, and they would steal their crops and they would steal their animals. And God says, "I allowed that to happen because you wouldn't listen to what I said. And what I said to you is for your good." And this famine had brought chaos to the land. There was also the personal heartache. Elimelech takes his wife, Naomi, his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, into Moab. And we see in the opening verses of Ruth chapter 1 that shortly after this man, Elimelech, does this, he dies. The two sons, we read, then marry two Moabite women, verse 4. One girl's called Orpha, the other girl's called Ruth. And they live together in Moab for about 10 years. And then we read verse 5 that both Mahlon and Chilion die. So here are these three women, Naomi the older woman, these two younger women, Ruth and Orpha, and they are widowed. Now that's tough in anybody's life. They lose the protection of their husbands. They lose the provision of care. They lose the promise of the future. They lose the prospect of having children if that would have been blessed to them. They lose their security. They lose their safety. Now they have to fend for themselves. They would have been filled with so many what if questions. What if? What might have been? If only. Put yourself into their shoes. Put yourself into Naomi's shoes. She had gone into Moab with her husband, with all the prospects of all a new life in Moab. Two sons, two men would grow up. Whether they would have a family business and all that would flow from that. Then Elimelech dies. Tough blow. Hard blow. But she still has her two sons. They wouldn't have replaced her husband in any way at all. They wouldn't have replaced his affection, his love and his care. But at least she could have diverted her thoughts, her secret thoughts of loss about Elimelech. At least she could have steered them on to, well, I must keep busy for my sons. The days that she would have felt lonely and wakened up feeling my world has gone, she would have said, well, I need to look after the two boys. Diverted the attention to them. And then when they married, she would have thought, now there's a nice wee family. And then it's gone. The nice wee family's gone. It's not going to come back again. They just had to get on with it. And they had to get on with it in a very harsh environment. One where exploitation was rife. One where women were mistreated. Women had a difficult time. This would not have been a pleasant experience. You wouldn't have met Naomi and asked her, well, who are you and tell me your life story? And walked away with her, away from her, thinking anything other than, I'm glad I'm not in her shoes. I'm glad I'm not in her situation. Dear, help that woman. How she copes the loss of her husband, the loss of her two sons, in this foreign country, and having to go out and work in the fields at her age. And then she hears something we read in verse 6 that captivates her attention. It's the news that the Lord God has visited Israel and that he has blessed Israel again, verse 6, by giving them food. The famine that had been induced by the sinful activities and actions of the people, the Lord had withheld the crops, and now the Lord visits with blessing. And Naomi responds to this news. Naomi, you see, is put in a place here where she has a choice to make. Naomi has a choice to make. Is she going to stay in Moab, or is she going to go back to Israel? Is she going to remain with these two young women, or is she going to go back to Israel? Is she going to stay where her memories will be those marked by the suffering and the loss of her husband and her two sons, or is she going to go back to Israel? Back to her own people. Well, it's not easy going back to your own people when they're going to say to you, and how's Elimelech? We didn't see him coming with you. Well, actually, Elimelech's dead. Well, how are the boys? How's Mahlon and Chilion? How are they, big lads now? Suppose they're married. Well, they're dead too. But she listens and she hears this news of what God has done. And she takes heed and she acts. She takes heed and she acts. And the Lord comes to us and visits us and speaks to us. We need to listen and hear and take heed. On telling her daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth, that they're going to, or she's going to leave and go back to Israel, she probably didn't expect them to go with her. She probably thought they'll go for Othniel for a few miles, 1 or 2 miles, and that'll be it. They'll say their goodbyes, and we'll hug and we'll kiss, and that'll be it. But as she makes her way back to Bethlehem, we find that here they don't leave her. They keep on walking. And the further that she goes, the further they go, until it reaches a point where Naomi's beginning to look at them and think to them, are you not stopping? Her expectation is that they're going to stop. Her expectation is that she is going to go on to Israel on her own, to Bethlehem, where she had come from, and meet her family again on her own. That's her expectation. But they are walking with her, and they keep walking with her. And then we see Naomi, and this woman is an amazing person. Once we have tracked her life through this book, tonight and tomorrow night and the Lord's Day, we'll see that this woman is a real realist. She's a real serious woman. She gets to the point. She speaks straightforwardly. She cares for these two young women. And she says to them in verse 8, "Go return each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with me." These are two young Moabite widows. They're traveling into a foreign land. Given the degree of hostility between Israel and Moab, Naomi realizes that this is going to be a very difficult experience for them if they go with her. She doesn't want them to go with her. It's not that she doesn't want them to go with her because she doesn't care for them. She does care for them. It's not that she doesn't want them to go with her because she doesn't want the companionship. She does want the companionship. It's not that she doesn't want them to go with her because she doesn't want to look after them in the future. It's not about looking after them in the future. The whole point about the exercise for her is, I can't provide for them, and the future that they will have in Israel is going to be beyond bleak. Beyond bleak. They're going to be treated as foreigners. Different language. Although it was only 50 or 60 miles apart, different cultural purposes. She could have done. And would we have regarded her as being selfless if she'd have said to them, "Well, do you want to come back with me? It would be nice as I get older that there'd be someone there to look after me. I'll look after you. I'll introduce you to the people in Bethlehem. I'm sure they'll welcome you into the home that we have, and I'm sure that things will go well." Would we have looked upon her harshly if she had said that in any way? No, we wouldn't have looked upon her harshly. We'd have said that's what we'd expect her to say. But she doesn't. You see, for Naomi, this is not about Naomi. She encourages them. In fact, she tells them to go back to their respective homes. It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if you noticed it. She actually tells them to go back to their mother's home. It's not that their mothers and fathers lived in separate homes, but I think the point that she's making there is a very simple one, that the mother was the one who would have looked after the marital arrangements. A bit like our culture today. We, God willing, will have a wedding in the church and whatever, 5 or 6 weeks' time, maybe less, a month's time. The illustration of my point has just been illustrated by the parents of the girl that's going to be married, because the mother's sitting looking like this, and the father's sitting. And that illustrates the point, doesn't it? The father will turn up like every other father on that day, and he'll be all flustered because what he had to get organized that week is his kilt, and he's had to get his hair cut. That's what he's had to get organized. That's it. Like every other father, on the day of the wedding, the week of the wedding, that's what he has to organize. The mother, she'll have organized everything. And she'll come in quite serenely, and he'll come in a panic, like every other father comes in a panic, as if the whole world rests on his shoulders. And he has two words to say on that day. Do you give this girl to be a bride, and he'll have to say, I do. And if he gets through that without fluffing them, like every other father, he'll do well. And so it's always the mother. It's always the mother who takes responsibility. And so here it is that she is sending them back, not to the fact that their parents were divorced, but she identifies saying, you go back to your mother's house because there's the hope of a marriage in this, possibly. Whereas if you go to Israel with me, there's no marriage. There's nobody going to want to look at you because you're a Moabite and this is Israel. What about Orpha's decision? Two girls. Well, we read that Orpha listens to what Naomi said. It's evident that Orpha has a real serious love for Naomi. She cares for Naomi. She has walked with Naomi. She has dealt kindly with Naomi. But as Orpha thinks about the prospect of Israel, the struggle, the ostracization, the misery, the hard work, the prospects, well, there are no prospects. And she thinks about Moab and the home life and the possibility of future and the marriage possibility, maybe a family and the support. Then Orpha, with Naomi's encouragement, makes a choice. It's a sensible choice. It's the reasonable choice. It's the choice that you'd expected her to make. It's the choice of, I'm going to go back to my family in Moab. And nobody sits and reads that and thinks, well, that's selfish. Because she has been encouraged to do it. Well, sometimes in life people encourage you to do things and you don't do it because they're really encouraging you half-heartedly because you know they're just saying it for the sake of saying it. They don't really want you to do it at all. They want you to do what they want you to do and you know what they want you to do. So they're sort of just covering the angles. But that's not the case here. Naomi has, with all intent of heart, encouraged Orpha and Ruth to do this. And Orpha does it. She does it. She leaves, having kissed Naomi. She lifts up her voice. She weeps. It takes two encouragements of Naomi to get her to leave. But it doesn't take a third one. Initially, she, like Ruth, clings on. But then Naomi is very clear, and she says to them, even if I had a son tonight, two sons, if I had a husband, had two sons tonight, would you wait until those two sons had grown into maturity in order to marry them? She says, that's not going to happen, is it? And when she hears these words, we read in verse 14 that Orpha kisses her mother-in-law, and the clear, unwritten statement is that she leaves and goes home. Now tonight, you can hear and sing about God. And in a sense, you're confronted by God by being in this place of worship. And there may be many who would say to you, it makes complete sense not to have anything else to do with God. There are many, many thousands of people in this community tonight who have no interest in God at all. And they've made a choice. They've made a choice not to come and hear about God. We would like them to make a different choice, but they have made that choice. We don't hear anything else about Orpha's life. The last thing that we read is she kissed her mother-in-law, and that's the end of the story. We now hear about Ruth and the choice that she has made. And the choice that Ruth makes is absolutely astonishing. When you actually think of the context, when you think of the prospect, when you think of what lies ahead of Ruth, the choice that Ruth makes is absolutely astonishing. The prospect ahead for Ruth is one of hopelessness. It's a hopeless prospect. She's not going to go back to her family. She's not staying in her homeland. She's going to an alien land. She's going to a different people of another culture, of another language, where she is going to be a stranger. She is going, and she has no prospect of a marital relationship in the future. The only prospect that Ruth has is going and working in the fields or in some location in order to provide for her and Naomi. That's her only prospect. Her only prospect is going and laboring day after day, and she's a young woman. She has her whole life ahead of her. And her only prospect is going into this foreign land, into this foreign people, with this foreign language, with this woman who is broken and filled with heartache and hurt. This woman who thinks of her husband who has died and her two sons who has died. This woman who says, "Call me Mara, because the Lord has dealt with me bitterly." This woman whose whole purpose and vision and future and life has been totally decimated. Totally decimated. And she has no hope, no future. And here is this young woman, and she's tagging along with Naomi. And what of her prospects after Naomi's life comes to an end? Because it's not a given. But Naomi is probably going to die before her. What's Ruth's prospects then? If they're bleak in Moab, and they're bleak and bleaker in Israel, whenever Naomi's there, they're certainly going to be far more bleak when she's there on her own. As an old, aged, widowed Moabite living in Israel. She's completely unaware of what lies ahead. She's not aware of the provision that's going to come. She's not aware of the love and affection that's going to come. She's totally unaware of the care that she's going to experience. She's completely unaware of the fact that she's going to find a husband. None of that. We read that. We know that. And that's one of our problems, you see. We read something like this and we read through it and we know the end of the story. And so we bring all the end of the story back into here and we think, well, it wasn't that tough for her, because in reality this is how it turned out. Well, she had no idea how it was going to turn out. She had no awareness of how it was going to turn out. This is all yet to happen in her life. And yet we read that she turns and she goes with Naomi. And she's not ignorant of the future. Some people would say, well, she's a naive young woman. She didn't really know what was going to happen. How could she be naive whenever Naomi stands and looks her in the eye on the road and says, "Turn back, my daughters, why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Turn back. Second time she tells me, turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear you sons, would you wait? It's not as if Ruth is standing there and thinking to herself, well, things might turn all right. Naomi is being open. Naomi is being honest. Naomi is being straight. And Naomi is telling her, you have no future at all in Israel. You haven't got a future. That shows you how much Naomi loved her. Naomi could have said, well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. Come along and we'll see. Ruth's response is truly remarkable. It's astonishing. In verse 17, 16 and 17, after Orpha has gone, Naomi says to her, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. And Ruth then says, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people. Your God, my God. Where you are buried, I will die and I will be buried. This is not romantic emotionalism. This is not romantic emotionalism. This woman is not getting carried away here. She's not standing on the edge of the street and she sees the old woman bent over hunched. And she knows how hurt she is. She knows the heartache that's in her heart. And she sees the tears running down her face. And she sees her daughter, or other sister-in-law, Orpha, and the tears are running down her face. And Ruth turns around and says to her, I'll just go with you, sure. I'll just go with you. It's not that the words of Naomi has gone in one ear and out the other. It's not that she is caught up in the emotionalism of it all. It's not that she is taken with the sense to show some love. Where you die, I will die. And I'll be buried beside you. Can't say that's emotionalism. You can't say that's romanticism. Why does she do this? Why does she respond in this way? Hear this. Ruth makes this choice because she sees in Israel the hope of a relationship with God. She sees in Israel the hope of a relationship with God. She has seen in the life of Naomi something that tells her that God is real. She has listened to Naomi say, my daughters, my daughters, my daughters. She has watched Naomi being gentle and thoughtful and kind with them. She has heard Naomi, the same woman who has been broken by the death of her husband and her two sons. She has heard this woman say to them in verse 8, may the Lord deal kindly with you. And in verse 9, may the Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. Naomi is honest. Naomi is direct. Naomi is straight. Naomi says, God, you have dealt with me harshly. Naomi says, my life has been broken. Naomi says to these girls that God, the hand of God has gone against me. Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara, for the Lord has dealt with me very bitterly. So Naomi is not saying that, oh, I don't care. God is love and everything that happens in my life, although it's difficult, it's easy. Naomi's not like that. Naomi's not like these people who say, come to God and your life will be easy ever after, because that's a nonsense. It's not true. It's not true. It's a lie. But Naomi looks to God and says, yes, God, you've taken my husband. Yes, you've taken my Mahlon. Yes, you've taken my Chilion. But you have loved me, and I trust you because you are God and you know what's right. It's not that she's not moved emotionally with the reality of the situation. Naomi is moved emotionally by the reality of the situation, but she trusts God. She trusts God. And she trusts God because she knows God. She knows the character of God. She knows that He is the God of covenant promise. The word that's used here to describe God is that very word. It's about God who is to be loved because He's a God of covenant promise. He's to be trusted and believed in. He's El Shaddai, the God of mercy, the God of grace, the Lord God of truth, the God of promise. This is real love, you see. Real love doesn't buckle under hardship. Real love doesn't buckle under hardship. Real love walks through the difficulty and continues to hold the hand. And Ruth saw this in Naomi. She saw that through all the hardship, this woman still loved God. This woman still loved God. You've come here tonight. Who have you come with? Why have you come? Well, there'll be many, maybe many reasons why you came. But maybe there's one or two of you in here tonight. And the reason why you're here is because the person you're sitting beside or close to you is someone you've looked at and you know their life hasn't always been easy. And yet you know deep inside there's something about them and what they talk about God as being real. You know it's real. You know it's real. It's not just about going to church on a Sunday. It's not that they go to church on a Sunday and then the rest of the week they're like all the other people you know. You know that's not the case. You know that they really believe in God. They really believe in God. You know that they really care about you because they really believe in God. You know that they want the best for you because they really believe in God. And as Naomi makes her way from Moab to Judah and Israel, Ruth says to her, I'm coming with you. Not because she's filled with a mixture of romantic nonsense. Not because she thinks, well, Orpha's done that, so I'm going to do this. Ruth goes with Naomi because Ruth sees in Naomi's life something that is real in terms of her love and belief in God. Ruth sees it. And Ruth wants to know more about it. Rationally, it makes no sense. To turn her back on Moab makes no sense. To turn her back on her family in Moab makes no sense. To turn her back on the prospect of a husband and family potentially in Moab makes no sense. To turn her face to Israel, to the foreign alien land, to turn her face to another language, to turn her face to a culture that she knows nothing really about, to turn her face to the prospect of working every day of her life to put food in her stomach and to put food in the stomach of this older woman, and then to spend the rest of her days, when this older woman has died, getting up in the morning, going out and working to come home, to lie down, to get up to sleep, to go to get up in the morning, to go out and work, and to come back, to lie down and sleep. And every day, all of that is ahead of her. All that loneliness, all that tiredness, all that hard work, all that emptiness is ahead of her. It makes no sense. Go back to Moab. Go back to the family. Go back to them who love you. Go back to those who care for you. Go back and get a husband. Go back and have a life. Rather than looking to Israel and death and the grave, why would a young woman make that decision? Why would she make that choice? There's only one reason why she would make that choice. Because she saw in Israel the prospect of a relationship with God that was more important to her than all she could have in Moab. Her life in Moab would be good. Her life in Moab would be easy. Her life in Moab would be pleasurable. Her life in Moab would probably fulfill her. She could describe life in Moab, and everything that would come from it would be good. She looked into Israel, and all that you could say was loneliness, bleakness, tiredness, frustration, anger, heartache. Why on earth would you do it? Are you stupid, Ruth? Are you absolutely stupid? You feel like reaching out and shaking her and saying, look at your sister-in-law Orpha. At least she has some sense. Listen to Naomi. Do not urge me to leave you or return from following you, for your God will be my God. Your God will be my God. That's the only thing that makes any sense. Your God will be my God. Your God will be my God. You know, in our lives, in terms of our life on earth, choosing to think about God makes no sense. Choosing to think about God makes no sense at all. I could stack up a page full of reasons why choosing to think about God makes no sense. You could write on the other side of the page as many reasons why you think that choosing to think about God makes no sense. But here's the point. It's not about this life. It's about eternity. Do you want to move from the heartache of the not having a relationship with God to the joy of having a relationship with God? If you want to make that journey, you have to make a choice. You have to make a choice. And you have to make it for yourself. Young people, you have to make it for yourself. Children, you have to make it for yourself. You have to make it for yourself. Orpha made her choice. Ruth made her choice. You have to make it for yourself. It's times in life we have to make a decision for ourselves. There's a time in our lives when we have to make a choice for ourselves. We have to receive what God would say and hear it for ourselves. And if you're going to make the journey from heartache and the loss of a relationship from God to the joy of having that relationship with God, then you have to make a choice. And that choice is to go the way of seeking after God. That choice involves walking in the way of seeking after God. And if you leave this building tonight, and God speaks to you and you choose to go to Moab with Orpha, but if you choose to go with Ruth and to Israel, then there's many wonderful chapters to follow. Many wonderful chapters to follow. If you go to Moab, it's
You go to Israel, it's many chapters to follow. You can decide. You can make a choice. Amen.